Momo, the Deputy Director, Director General of Tax and Financial Sector Policy, National Treasury and his team. Let me say upfront, Momo, that we welcome the presentation that you're going to give to us, but it's a very, very tight day. You might not be aware, most of the parliamentarians, in fact, if not all of them, are expected to be in Mangaung or Bloemfontein from today. And the planes to that part of the world are very, very scarce. So we might not exhaust your presentation in terms of discussion, but we'll just take it, and then we'll find a way to process the deliberations further. I've been informed by 12:30 the transport leaves for those who are going to. So you have got a very, very short space of time, but let's try and see what we can do to the best of your ability. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for having us here, because I think that this presentation has been kind of long overdue, and in a way events are even overtaking us as we speak. And I will come back to that. Chair, I've got Roy Huberman, who's one of the people who played quite a critical role in pulling this document together. And we're going to have Unati Kamlana join us, but he had some health care and was unable to come. He's sitting in a clinic going through tests, so I hope everything's okay with him. And then we've got Peter Smith, who's from the FIC, who's just decided to join us as well. So we just thank him for coming. I think, Chair, this document was, as you know, published with the budget, and of course is available. We've got a few copies here if members want, over there. Everything we call the red book, because everything the Treasury does is in red, so, but somehow this has become known as the red book in the financial sector. And what it aims to do is to essentially make the financial sector safer by tightening the prudential regulations. And let me say, prudential refers to the soundness of an institution. If you take out a pension fund, you want to know that in 30 or 50 years' time, that fund will still be there to pay you out. So sometimes the prudential is not just, it's not just your bank deposit that you want to make sure if you deposit today that it's there tomorrow, but you want to make sure that your pension that you put today is there. So prudential refers to the financial soundness. For financial institutions, whether they're banks, pensions, you always got to focus on those, and I'll deal with that in a bit more detail. And I'll explain some of these things, but the big shifts are to move our regulation towards what we call a twin peak model, and really incorporate two issues. Firstly, to allow for macroprudential supervision. These are big words, and I'll explain them in a moment. And to strengthen not just the prudential, but the market conduct. And that refers to a lot of the way businesses conduct their business, in this case, banks, pension funds, and kind of touches on the whole area of consumer protection as well. So that's the aim, but on top of it, just given our level of development, obviously we aim to broaden access to the financial sector, and we made a previous presentation on the charter and so on to the committee last year, and we aim to also, and that's why people like Peter do this, to ensure the integrity of the financial sector, which is a very important issue to look at. Main Street, and though we won't be dealing with those today, is, you know, we also publish on Budget Day the Regulation 28 Gazette, which regulates the investment framework for pension funds. We also publish two papers. Firstly, a paper on what we call the looking at prudential exposure framework, like limits, foreign limits of funds, deals with issues like how, you know, whether you give companies a foreign or domestic listing on the JSE. But understanding the foreign exposure is quite important, especially when you see the rand suddenly go from 6.70 to 7.70. If you have exposures in dollars, overnight you could be in serious trouble. If you're a financial institution, that is even a bigger issue. So it deals with the financial sector and financial exposure. And it deals with a second paper, a framework for cross-border direct investment. That we find that in South Africa there's a plethora of provisions that apply when you want to invest in this country. On the one hand, we actually have not much in the way of any controls, because we almost were saying all foreign direct investment is good. But I guess more recently, if you look at countries, they feel there are strategic interest issues. How do you deal with them? There's always regulatory issues. If somebody wants to buy a mine, they need to go through the mining framework, and regulators, and department. If they want to open a bank, they need to go through still get regulatory approval. The issue is, how can you harmonize and simplify our investment framework? Kind of can also deal with issues like the Walmart coming into South Africa, how you deal with it. Fortunately, this paper was put out before Walmart became an issue. And, you know, we've been taking public comments. And we would be interested even in these areas to have further discussion down the line. I'm not going to deal with those issues today, but I did think we need to bring this to your attention. Then, of course, there were a whole host of urgent issues on the financial sector that we felt we needed to put in place. Some of this are in the tax laws amendment bill. Some of them have been slightly delayed because further work is necessary, but certainly will be brought forth in legislation in the next few months. So I think that's just the context. Let me say, so what drove us on this document was that I would have liked to say the financial crisis of 2007 and 2008, but I think that if you just look at the events the last month, it's still continuing, so it's not over. And as you know, when it first emerged, the G20 was stepped up from ministers of finance to presidents. Heads of state began to meet. President Mkhlanti at that time was the head of state, and of course now President Zuma attends these. It's been at least twice a year. And lots of commitments have been made in those forums to try and make the financial sector safer. The one that you would have heard about is Basel III, which is the kinds of norms or safety measures, or what they call buffers, capital reserves that banks have to hold. That's been increased. And the G20 also converted what used to be called the Financial Stability Forum, which essentially consists of G20 members, but also consists of big financial centers like Singapore, Hong Kong, Switzerland. And this forum meets twice a year in its plenary form, has lots of committees doing work, looking at issues like financial vulnerability. I, in fact, attend those meetings on behalf of South Africa. You have really fascinating discussions taking place on how to make the financial sector safer. We were not part of that club before, but it changed its name from the Financial Stability Forum to the Financial Stability Board year before last, and South Africa has one seat on it. The bigger countries, advanced economies, have three. But so do all the other BRIC countries have three seats. We only have one. So if you look at other countries, they tend to have the Reserve Bank, one or two regulators, and perhaps the treasuries that attend. In our case, it's only the treasury. We're hoping that we can at least get a second seat, because we think the SARB certainly needs to also attend those. But anyway, there's a lot of commitments that arose from there. And of course, it wasn't just because of these commitments. I think that our attempts to make the financial sector safer started with a round table that at that time Minister Mandel set up, and that followed the Fidentia event, or the Fidentia problem. When charges were laid, the minister convened what he called at that time a round table of all the financial sector regulators, of the standard setters, and said, what are the issues? For example, in the financial sector, to get in, you need to be fit and proper. What does fit and proper mean? Do we have a harmonized system? Of course, we didn't then, and we still don't. But I think that the issue was, can we have a more harmonized system? Because, and in that sense, we were making the point that the financial sector, you don't just have a constitutional right to enter and provide financial sector services. You have to be licensed. As I said, it's that pension fund which doesn't have to complete a transaction tomorrow. It's in 50 years' time. You need to know that that institution is going to be around. So there's big issues there, and so it preceded even the 2007 and 8 crisis. I think that there's been other pressures. If you look at that, our basically on the market conduct side, I do think that our financial sector is obviously concentrated and has been very opaque in the past about the fee structure. I think in South Africa sometimes you need a PhD, and even then you won't understand the fee structure of financial institutions, and our medical aid companies, I should add. And you know, the whole move in the world is that don't treat people as being too stupid to ask. The companies need to be transparent. It's the opaqueness is deliberate. Then, of course, there were issues of access, given our developmental needs. How do you get to broaden access, and what do we mean by that? And I think quite important, and I want to deal with this certainly as I get to the end, is a coordinated approach to tackling financial crime. This is a big area, Chair. And, you know, the difference is that those who indulge in crimes in the financial sector actually steal not just a lot of money, but they have a lot of money to defend themselves. And as they are able to have a very coordinated and vicious campaign when you try and bring them to book. And it's an area that I think we really need to look at in South Africa and make sure that we put such people safely in jail where they belong. Now, I think that if you look at the document then, and I'm not going to go through everything here, but there's what we would say about four pillars. One is financial stability. If you don't have financial stability, you have nothing. Second, as I said, is consumer protection and market conduct. Third is the whole issues of access or financial inclusion. How do you get poorer people into the financial system? And the last, combating financial crime. We've also established two committees. On the one hand, a Financial Stability Oversight Committee, or we talk about establishing them, and the Council for Financial Regulators. Because one of the lessons of the financial crisis has been that many regulators worked in silos. And I'm not just talking about South Africa. If you analyze the problems, you know, in the U.S. they've got, even every state there are different regulators. And there's, sure, there's at least 70, 80 regulators in the U.S. And that's why, you know, when you had subprime products, somebody else was looking at it. Nobody was checking what that meant for banks, but credit rating agencies. And in this space, that caused this lack of coordination and sharing of information between regulators is a critical challenge in every country. And not that this will address it, but if you look at many of our companies, whether you look at an APSA or an Old Mutual, they tend to have a footprint in other countries, often have a controlling shareholder in other countries, and therefore the so-called home regulator might be in the UK. The host regulator might be here, even though the company is bigger here relative to our economy than, say, in the UK. and how do you have coordination between the two? So these are quite complex issues that we need to deal with. So I think, Chair, the starting point in this document then was Chapter 2, where we tried to say, here you had this financial crisis. What were the key lessons that we learned? Now, I'm not going to go through all of it. I hope members will be able to go through them. But the biggest issue that emerged was the need for a macroprudential or system-wide approach to risk. What you had before is, if you're a bank regulator, you just looked at the banks and you said they're safe. If you're the insurance regulator, you just looked at the insurance sector, and you looked at them institution by institution. But what we saw in the financial crisis is, even when one bank goes, it poses what we call a systemic risk to everybody else. It's like a cancer, but it progresses very fast. When it's there, it affects everyone around. You can be certain if one of our major banks falls, all the banks will fall, because there's a lot of interconnectedness. And that's why you don't want to... When Lehman fell in October 2008, was it September, it was last week, 2 or 3 years ago. When it fell, it actually spread to the banking system, not just in the US, but globally. And that in turn caused your economic recession. And although our banks were safe, the recession in the U.S. and in your European economies actually spread rapidly to South Africa. And as we saw, we lost 1 million jobs, proportionately more than any other G20 economy, even though we didn't have a financial crisis. So the big lesson is, we need to focus on macroprudential. You need to get your banking, your insurance regulators, they need to take a systems-wide approach. And that's why I think 2 years ago the Minister of Finance gave this responsibility and that of financial stability, the operational responsibility, to the Governor of the Reserve Bank, just after Minister Gordon and Governor Marcus came in. You will recall that in that budget in 2009 there was a letter from the Minister asking the South to perform this function, which was made public, on financial stability. So to do that, you need to analyze economic imbalances, asset price bubbles, if your property market's rising too fast, like in Ireland, your banks are exposed. When this bubble bursts, the banks get into trouble. If you look at the current situation, many European banks have exposure to Greek debt. So if you just watch this movie we're living in called the Eurozone Crisis, where Secretary Geithner from the U.S. had to go and tell the Europeans, you guys need to solve this problem because it's spreading like cancer, it's rapid. The Europeans, for whatever reason, because it's tough, have not been able to get ahead of the curve to resolve the Greek problem. And the problem with resolving Greece is not that Greece will have an impact on the euro as such directly, but that many European banks in France and Greece and Germany are also exposed to those to Greek government debt. So if that becomes valueless, it impacts on the banks. And if your banks go, everything goes. So that's the dilemma that Europe faces. So it's not like the German taxpayers have been asked to bail out Greece. They have to do that to preserve the euro, but essentially they have to save their own banks, who were foolish enough to buy Greek debt. But they weren't so foolish, because on the one hand, if you're a great surplus country, you've got to look for good investments. The good investments were in Greece, Greek bonds, that's the kind of interconnectedness that you have. So in today's world, if you look at the macro system thing, you aside from interest rates, you can play around with capital reserve requirements, you can limit the exposure that people have on certain types of assets. This is a whole new evolving area. There's no one way of doing macroprudential supervision. But if you look at our Reserve Bank, it now has what do they call a Financial Policy Committee that's beginning to do this, in addition to the Monetary Policy Committee. And of course, the approach here is that you need to be counter-cyclical in your approach. The problem here is who's the party pooper. When everybody's buying housing bonds and everyone's going mad, you've got to say to people, but this is risky, and burst the bubble. You'll be the spoil sport. But somebody needs to be unpopular and say those things. So I think this has been the key lesson from the financial crisis: macroprudential supervision, in addition to what we call micro-supervision, which is supervision over each institution. And therefore, we have stronger prudential, or what you say, financial soundness requirements for banking and insurance. And insurance in South Africa, the FSB is doing that. Our FSB is, of course, the Financial Services Board, not to be mistaken with the Financial Stability Board overseas. And they are putting in place their own solvency assessment and management framework, which is based on, in Europe, what's called Solvency II. But unlike banking, there's no one standard like Basel II or Basel III, because, for example, in the US, insurance is regulated by states, so you have to talk to hundreds of regulators. I won't spend as much time on the other slides, Chair, but I thought we should focus on these. But arising out of this, in this document, we propose a set of principles that we thought were important for the financial sector. These, for example, said, you know, all financial service providers must be appropriately licensed or regulated. If you're not licensed, you shouldn't be allowed to operate. We've also said at the same time, regulation and supervision must be transparent and sufficiently intense, intrusive, and effective. One of the big problems you had with the financial sector was that it was lightly regulated. It was, people like Alan Greenspan talked about light touch regulation. Well, it ain't going to be light anymore. It's got to be intense, intrusive, and effective. That's been one of the big lessons. Obviously, you want regulators, and this is a key point here, must be allowed to operate with integrity and be operationally independent. So, because they, the guys who have to say, is this person fit and proper to run a bank? Is this person, when a bank is functioning, are they doing the right thing? They might be putting too much store in low-cost housing, which is a political priority, and we understand that. But it might be bringing risk to the system. They've got to be able to almost say things that are unpopular. So it's very important that they are operationally independent, and we certainly in legislation that will be coming to you over the next few years, that's a key principle that we want to put in place. We also think that our regulations should have universal applicability. Now, Chair, here, and it's an important point, many of your state pension funds don't fall under the Pensions Fund Act. I think yesterday you were looking at some of the amendments to the GPF. So those things cause problems. If you're going to have a post bank, are you going to have lesser conditions that apply than with other banks? You know, all those issues come up. Similarly, I think we've talked about macroprudential, we've talked about market conduct, and I'll come to that. And unfortunately, the last point, one of the big lessons is for those of us who realize Section 6 of the Terrorism Act. You need state of emergency powers. When one bank's in trouble, you really have to have strong powers. If you looked at in the US, you know, on a Friday night, they call the banks, they say, you will buy this back. Because, you know, there's no time to be democratic. There's no time to have ordinary bankruptcy provisions. If you look at our Banks Act, you even bypass competition legislation, because there are a few banks. When one bank's in trouble, from four you move to three, say, or whatever. And this has all to be sorted out during the weekend before the markets open, and by Sunday before the Asian markets open, you've got to say, we've solved the problem. So you'll see when there's a financial crisis, often it's done at night, in the dark, and it's often done during weekends. But you need to have those powers. And I think in a lot of the issues we're bringing forth, is we're going to ask for the same Krachtadach powers that we used to be at the receiving end of, to give to some of the supervisors when there's a problem. So what are the proposals? I think the big one we're saying is on our regulatory system, we need to have a twin peak model. What does twin peak model mean? It means, just go to the next slide. It basically means that we want to have one regulator to deal with Prudential. Now, Chair, a few years ago, we were almost going the uniform regulatory model that the UK had, where the Financial Services Authority was responsible for both Prudential and market conduct. If you also look at our model, I think we felt that market conduct has been neglected. So if you look at banking, there's a Prudential regulator in Assam, but nobody looks at bank charges and you know, or looks at market conduct. Those issues, and the FSB, if you recall, looks at your non-banking sector. So the point is we're saying that you need to have one Prudential regulator, and that should be situated at the SARB, and you need to have a market conduct regulator, and what we would see is that the Financial Services Board should become a market conduct regulator. It will mean that a lot of the prudential things in, say, in insurance will move to the SARB. And similarly, so the Banking Supervision Department, insurance, prudential will then all form part of a prudential unit within the SARB, and the FSB will become market conduct, will look at consumer protection, and so on. Just go back. So that's the two peaks that we have. And let me admit, so I think we've been perhaps not as strong as we should have been on market conduct. I've talked about operational independence, and then there's, you know, between the SARB, FSB, and Treasury and so on, we're talking about setting up a Financial Stability Oversight Committee, which will be jointly chaired by the Governor and the Minister of Finance. And this, we think, will meet, for example, on a quarterly basis, right? And more often when things, if you look at the current sort of climate. So that's your key prudential regulators. And why do you have market conduct? Because unfortunately, you can't draw a line between market conduct and prudential. To give you an example, in many countries where the banking sector survived, it's because there are fewer banks. There is fewer in South Africa. You look at Canada, you look at Sweden. And, of course, when you have fewer banks, they have monopolistic power. Perhaps they charge higher fees. Now, on the one hand, because they have higher fees, they're not forced to go and gamble like you did in the U.S., where you had free banking. But free banking meant they gamble on those toxic products, and that led to the crisis. Now, what's the balance between the two is the issue. Move on. So I've talked about market conduct. I think that often in our system, roles and responsibilities are not clear. We've talked about coordination and info sharing, and that's where we're talking of a council of financial regulators, because there's many other regulators around. Some don't report to the Minister of Finance, like the National Credit Regulator. Some might be very small, like the Cooperative Banks Development Agency. Some are standard setters. You want to have a forum which doesn't deal with the, as opposed to the Financial Stability Oversight Committee, which might have to deal with very confidential info. This is a more broader approach that you of information share. And of course, we need to, one of the lessons in a financial crisis is to increase the scope of regulation to areas that we didn't before regulate. Credit rating agencies were just allowed to operate. Payment systems don't fall under any, they are kind of regulated, but we don't see it within a regulatory framework. There are, the big issues were your derivatives market, your hedge funds. They all pose risks. And getting what we call OTC derivatives, bringing them away from like just bilateral agreements to what's called from over-the-counter derivatives towards some sort of clearinghouse so that it's more transparent. So I think just to move on and just no, go back. I think that also when you look at market conduct chain, just hearing the discussion earlier, that you know in the financial sector there's lots of ombuds around. The whole ombud system needs to be looked at, their funding, a lot of the questions you pose. I think that on the tech side, the ombuds are different from the financial sector. But there are issues here. Pensions fund adjudicator would be one, the banks ombuds, some of them in South Africa, industry ombuds, some of them are statutory ombuds, like the face ombud and the pension fund adjudicator. I think, Chair, so I'm going to now move very rapidly. We've got lots of issues. There's too many advisory committees. They're all supposed to advise the Minister of Finance. Frankly, there's so many. We've just devalued their quality. We want to rationalize these things. Move on. Just to give you a sense, we show you that some countries have one regulator, some have twin peaks, some have slight differences. This slide just shows you, and there's a box in here which indicates the different options that could be available. I've talked about Chapter 4, I won't deal with it, but market conduct will deal with protecting depositors, pension funds, etc., and looking at the fee system and getting transparency so that when you have a pension fund, you know exactly what you've been charged. I've talked about the gap on market conduct, which needs to be addressed. I should add that the FSB is running quite a good campaign called Treating Customers Fairly, which has really begun to shake this environment and take on market conduct in quite an aggressive way, which is something I think worth looking at. Move on. I've talked about the ombuds. We also will be looking at consumer financial education, how best to do it. And, Chair, I think an important point. In a lot of these, we do need, financial products are extremely complex. Often you have a situation where we have so many, it's almost impossible to compare. And you need activist consumer bodies that are looking at it. We think there should even be a levy on the financial sector, which is not big, which kind of goes towards funding such bodies in an independent way. There are currently levies in the system, as you may be aware, so we're not talking of any new levy. Chapter 5, I think, just looks at some of the pension issues, the challenge of mandatory preservation, provident funds, etc. And then I think we really get to the area of how do you safeguard pensioners and make sure, because, often people say South Africans don't save. But I think part of the problem is even when they save, our financial sector has proved to be really good at making money, but unfortunately only for themselves. So they make a lot of money, but is there enough that's been given to the pensioners? A lot is taken through charges, and we think that these are areas where we need to make real progress. And really make it worthwhile for people to save, because the industry is not swallowing up the savings that are made. Let me talk about financial inclusion. These are tougher issues. How do you get the poor into the financial sector? We've talked about Zansi accounts in the past. I won't deal with it. But areas of small business finance, housing finance, the role of the financial sector charter, and I should add recent initiatives, and you'd find those papers on the Treasury website. Like we've got a micro-insurance policy paper. It basically covers a lot of the funeral insurance industry, which in our society that's a big issue, but it's completely unregulated. And this policy paper will be coming with legislation to give it effect and to enable micro-insurance and give consumers the necessary protection, because most of those consumers are poor people. So, Chair, I think these are just some of the initiatives that we have in mind. Just for the sake of time, I won't mention them, but they deal with issues like deposit insurance, etc. And then, Chair, I want to spend some time on combating financial crime, because I think even as we're doing this transformation, we need to ensure that things still continue. You don't want the period of transition to be hijacked or undermine the gains that we've made. And that's why Peter is here. There's issues of money laundering, there's issues of people who all kinds of abuses, how do we deal with them? And there is quite a lot of frustration, Chair, that even when we identify people who are clearly crooked, they get charged, it takes them years, they walk around, cases take forever. These are areas that we have no doubt need to be improved. Perhaps, you know, the Judicial Commission and so on need to look at how you can get more effective ways. Also, these crimes are sophisticated, and so people can use their resources to stretch the system and literally almost get away with their crimes. Lots of challenges on procedures every step of the way. I think currently you would have seen that the people charged in Fidentia and the KDEC pension fund launching a systematic campaign against the FSB. In fact, they're the only ones who are shouting, and their spokespeople. The curious thing is, why don't they think the FSB has done harm? Why don't they use it in their court cases? Because they'll get, the procedural issues will apply. But they go to the press, and it's been unfortunate that even the press has been taking their issues quite seriously and not asking the question. But why are we listening to the accused? These are people who are accused. They are good to level all kinds of charges. And I think that this is a challenge that we need to deal with quite decisively. I think, Chair, just in terms of progress, there's a lot of technical work taking place. We've set up a financial regulatory reform steering committee comprising the SARB, Treasury and FSB. We will bring in the other regulators. There's working groups on the prudential side, market conduct, economic impact, the legislative framework. This is a massive agenda. There's going to be lots of legislative modernization in the medium term. And of course, we'll have to move people around, etc. And we didn't want to introduce any lessen the uncertainty in the process. So to conclude, Chair, and just to say, Cabinet has approved the shift to Twin Peaks and the principles and the broad roadmap. We've received public comments on all the discussion papers. You may want us to come and talk to you about it at some point. We'd welcome that. Already, and this is not, there's going to be a major Twin Peak legislation, which will probably only be able to do sometime next year. But even before then, we can't wait. Some of these emergency provisions have to be put into current legislation. Some of the legislation also has to be amended because of the Companies Act. Some of the legislation has to be dealt with because the Consumer Protection Act, we've had to apply for exemptions. There was no intention that that would apply to the financial sector. Not because the financial sector doesn't need that, but frankly, the financial sector needs much higher standards for consumer protection. It's not like buying a vacuum machine. It's like a pension. You need to know that the consumer is protected over 50 years. You're not going to find out that the vacuum machine doesn't work when you take it home or within 1 year. So you need much stricter and higher criteria, and this is a practice all over. So you bring into your financial markets bill, credit ratings agency bill, financial services general amendment bill, which is an omnibus bill. The Banks Amendment Bill needs to be dealt with. These are all in a pot over the next few months. Some of them will be tabled even this year. I've talked about the challenge of enforcement mechanisms, and I think, as I said, that the challenge we face is to improve our system, but at the same time make sure that the system still continues to function and the scallops don't start getting their way, thinking that a transition is taking place. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Momo. You were very, very short. If you compare how you normally take presentations like this. Honorable members, comments? Honorable Brian?
Thank you, Chair. I think, Chair, the recent court ruling in Germany as to what is the role of Parliament in as far as this emergency pensions or maybe financial crisis requiring obviously urgent intervention has resuscitated, I mean, this aspect, the discourse on our role as parliamentarians in the process of taking decisions as to obviously care for, manage the impact of a financial crisis. Now, I'm not sure as to how is this provided for in the proposed, I mean, approach where financial regulators will be, of course, requiring emergency type of powers to deal with systematic financial crisis that will be requiring strong and overriding legislative powers. Where are we in that particular process in as far as your approach is concerned? And lastly, Chair, I appreciate the fact that there is an implementation approach that has been tabled, but what I'm missing is the timing. I'm raising this, Chair, because the result of the matter is that the evolution around the financial sector stability globally it's happening very rapidly. Of course, precipitated by the recent development in Europe, in fact, the Eurozone crisis, but also the U.S. debt crisis. And I think even our focus, as a result, are starting to change because of the impact of what is happening that side. Now, I'm not sure it seems if we might come up with an approach that is needed now at a bit later stage. So I'm a bit concerned about the timing of this approach. When are we intending to realize, I mean, some of these things happening? Or maybe also, did you take into consideration the fact that the problem is sitting with us now as we want to, I mean, obviously, come up with measures to address this problem, you know? And how is this approach going to assist us, I mean, to mitigate or maybe to cushion the impact of the recent, I mean, or maybe the current development in the cited economic zones? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you very much to the National Treasury. I think this was a very comprehensive document, and it's something that we certainly do need, because I do believe that consumers in South Africa, the person in the street, they are not properly protected in the financial sector. And also, it was mentioned, National Treasury mentioned this issue with the FSB, attacks on the FSB. I do think that there is a coordinated attack at the FSB. However, one of the reasons why it's came about was because there is a problem in the curatorship model, which has been raised before, and that needs attention. And so what happened in this instance, it seems, is that because there are some concerns about the curatorship model, that various parties took the opportunity to then use that as a weapon against the Financial Services Board, which I think is regrettable. However, it does alert us to a problem that needs to be resolved. But thank you very much, and I look forward to further work on this. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just a request. You know, I just feel which this is a very important presentation, but I don't know if the justice was made, because, you know, the DGA, if you look at how they are expected to strengthen the financial sector, there are so many proposals where they're indicating that the responsibilities or the roles of the FSB needs to be expanded. There should be some legislation that needs to be changed. There's quite a number of proposals, and based on that, I think I don't know if really the just as was made, to me, I'm not comfortable. I think we needed more time to make justice on this document. Thank you, Chair.
Perhaps Roy, if he wants to come in, and Peter then, and I'll tell you, Roy, perhaps on the stability issues and so on. See, I think the timing we're looking at for getting almost all the legislation through, we're looking at 3 years. Okay. We hope that most of the major legislation will be done next year, but it may creep into the following year as well. But as I've said, the system can't stop at the same time. So what we're hoping is there's a smooth transformation from the current to later. So we're assuring staff that they'll still be needed. In fact, if anything, once you have the new system, we need more of them to do some of this job. So, you know, people shouldn't be fearing loss of jobs, not knowing where they're going to go to, because none of these functions are going to be taken away. If anything, they've been strengthened. So dealing with the morale of your current institutions is also very important, making sure that they do their work vigorously. And in fact, if there's anything that I would criticize, and it's easy to do with any regulators, is are they being tough enough? And they need to get tougher and feel that there won't be a political price for being tough. But we've set out an elaborate plan. It does require a lot of research, and I just want to give you an example. Let's take Basel III and its impact on our banks. There's issues around liquidity, and Roy can talk about the committee he chairs. There's really tough issues. How does that impact on South African banks? Now, in terms of legislation, what we're doing is all of these issues that on emergency powers will come to you, because we know some of them will be draconian, and that you don't want to give this as a general power. You want to say if there's a systemic risk, then you need to act. In fact, you need to act so fast that everybody only gets consulted after. It will happen over a weekend. It will happen overnight. Certain people will have to be given that power, and of course, be accountable for it afterwards. That's quite important. So Parliament will always have its oversight role, but certainly in designing the legislation, I think it's going to be very important that Parliament assesses this. We will look at international practices, and all of this will be debated in quite a lot of detail. To what happens if there's a crisis now? I think that there are some tools that are available just in the current legislation. Fortunately, some of the measures that you have, and I want Roy to talk about this, are often a fiscal stimulus, etc., which is what you see through the budget. How much do you have austerity measures, etc.? Some of them are more specific issues, that if there's a problem with the bank, you may have to pump in money. The PFMA does have emergency provisions to allow that, with subsequent reporting to Parliament. So I think that there are enough tools. The key issue, and I think that whatever the legislation, it's the people who are there who enforce it. It's going to be the minister, it's going to be the governor, it's going to be their staff, it's going to be the regulators. So it's a 3-year time frame. We will come to Parliament. That's the role you would play. You'd certainly have an oversight role. And certainly, I think, on the bigger issues, and I want Roy just to talk briefly on the liquidity measure, but on the second question of timing that you raised. I mean, the IMF twice a year releases documents. Yesterday, they released their World Economic Outlook. Look at today's newspapers. They revised down growth projections. And, you know, whatever you might do, and this is the problem of Greece, they've had a recession now for 2 years or whatever. If they don't get growth, even the banks that aren't in trouble will get into trouble. So the best medicine is that you have growth. Then even banks, the economy can grow out of that problem. If you don't have a high growth scenario, there are even bigger challenges. So if you look at the World Economic Outlook, there are real concerns there from the Eurozone, the U.S., And then there's another report, it goes on at www.imf.org. Okay, or just Google. There's what's called a Global Financial Stability Report. So you have what's called the WAIO, the World Economic Outlook, and the Global Financial Monitoring Report, which gives you an overview of financial stability and some of the risks that you face. In fact, when you go to the Financial Services Board, they talk of this triangle, like a vicious triangle. You've got the state of your banks, you've got the state of, you've got your solvency debt, state of countries, and you've got your growth, economic outlook. These things all impact. If your sovereign bond markets go and there's no faith in it, your banks hold it, you have a bank crisis. So you get a country crisis, you get a bank crisis, and you have your economy won't grow. These things have become really connected, and I think certainly Parliament, I would say, we probably need more sessions, Chair. These are new areas. It's not clear. If you look at in Slovakia, Parliament's taking one stand. They don't want to approve the package that everybody else has to approve, and they have to approve it by yesterday. They took a decision in July. If one small country blocks it, that, not that they're even solving the Greek problem, but it will be worse. And if this thing spreads from Greece, and that's the worry, to Spain and Italy, these are big countries, you will have real reductions, even for us here, just in terms of economy. I don't know if you want to add on the 2 points. I'll deal with Dr. George's questions. The liquidity, just Basel III, to give a sense of the issues, and you might want to just add on the global outlook as well.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you very much, Chair. DG. The issue for us around the Basel III proposals is obviously we are simultaneously trying to strengthen the financial sector, which means we're trying to tighten the regulation of the banking system, and we're simultaneously trying to get the economy to grow. So there's unfortunately inherently a little bit of a trade-off in the short run in terms of trying to tighten how the financial system is regulated and overall economic growth. And in Chapter 1 of the Red Book, we do go into quite a lot of detail about these sorts of trade-offs that we face as a government in terms of how we go forward. So we have put in place a process where we're evaluating the economic impact of all the financial regulation initiatives that we're taking, and we are trying to make sure that we go forward in such a way that actually it is to the long-term benefit of the economy and isn't to the short-run lack of benefits maybe to the economy. Specifically to the question on the ongoing financial stability issues and the need for us to react quickly, I completely agree. It's almost a case as if we're watching a car accident waste on the side happening in other countries, but it's not happening to us. And it's very important, and I think the Red Book does try and make this point, that we take as many of the lessons from the global financial crisis to heart in our own economy, but that we also have a benefit of having a little bit more time to assess what exactly will suit us compared to other countries. It's quite worrying to watch other countries rush through many, many changes to how their financial system operates, and they're not really sure about how these changes will impact on them. They're not sure what the economic costs will be, and they're not sure what the economic benefits will be, but they have a sense that they have to do something very quickly. And we've taken a choice to sort of watch what's happening internationally and then implement in a sort of a consistent and a carefully thought through way. And that's why we have this program which we will be bringing to Parliament in terms of each of the pieces of legislation we will bring separately, and we will ask the particular committee and I think Parliament to interrogate them each individually. I think that's
okay. Yeah, I think just to end on that particular note, you know, in the UK there's the biggest report on banking. Just from the little that I've read, it looks to me like an excellent report. Of course, even if we didn't adopt that model, the fact that Barclays has a majority share in EPSA, there are issues probably when they legislate that which we'll have to take into account. And in fact, in the Financial Times, Martin Wu was part of the journalist on the FT, part of the Vickers Commission, he said you know, the story of one of our brothers who got into trouble with UBS kind of was music to his ears, because he was a guy, a junior trader, you know, showing you how investment banks are like casinos. The question is not the issue aside of what he did, but how could UBS, or in this case, risk systems fail, where a guy so junior could get a $2.3 billion liability? So, you know, the institution would say rogue traders, but it really gets to the core of what the Vickers Commission is saying, that these gambling activities, even the major investment banks don't know how to deal with them. So you want to separate out the boarding business, retail banking activities, lending to small businesses. That's what we should protect. But the other stuff they gamble must be for their own risk. But you've got to then find a way in which you separate those activities. So, you know, a lot of these lessons are happening. I think we're living in very exciting times. You're learning as it's happening. There's no easy answers. Whether these things will work is another set of issues. Time will tell, but it's like HIV. We don't have the time to develop the vaccine or whatever. You know, we don't have the luxury of time here. Just on the other issue which Dr. George raised, and I think Dr. George has raised an important point, and I thank him for his comments, that orchestrated as these attacks are, I think there are issues, and, you know, I don't want to just deal with it with curators. If you look at some of the stories around liquidators, or when you have these cases, you know, you might say even lawyers who make lots of money. You know, we have sympathy that in the judicial system, they also don't take into account what I call perverse consequences. That someone who's a liquidator takes forever. What's their charge? How are they chosen? Is the pool big enough? Why are there only a few of them? And the guys who know how to smell money and go after money, they're not people who might be nice people to be friends with. But there's too few of them. And I do think that it's a separate issue, shouldn't be used by those accused. But perhaps some body like the Law Commission needs to look at the perverse incentives with curators, with liquidators, and how we can improve the system. I must say, we don't feel confident as a Treasury to say this is how you improve the system. As an economist, you can see the perverse outcomes, that these guys take as long as possible. And we've said to the regulators, you guys need to be sharper with these guys and make sure that they don't go on forever because they're making more money by stretching this case. So I'm saying that incentives are a problem, and I think we do need to apply our minds and I think talk to the Department of Justice and perhaps get a body like the Law Commission to do some work. But that it needs to be improved, I think, is there, but that shouldn't be an excuse for those who are on the wrong side of the law to use that as an excuse.
Thank you, Momo. I think the long and short of this presentation is that the rationalization process has started for the financial sector in earnest. Not just transformation, we're trying to rationalize, you know. And I agree that we have not been very focused. We've had too many institutions without a common center to manage them. And that, obviously, I think is a lesson that we've learned in terms of what has happened globally. The market conduct, regulatory issues, it's clear where they are going to be located. I think what we'll do as Parliament, and I agree that we need more sessions on this. This is almost a briefing that is more composite than the documentation that you have left with us here. We need to go through this documentation and find a way to call you back, so that we can also make our input even before a legislation is actually crafted to come to the committee so that we inform the processes. I don't know how we deal with this thing. You know, I as you read, there's Financial Times. So you read the document by Paul Krugman or Joseph Stephen, anybody. There's just so much information out there about what is the problem in the economy. But we just don't seem to know what to do. And that's a problem, and I don't know. Now, you are saying, in response to Honorable Conroy, that the reality of the matter is we are dealing with this financial crisis or economic crisis, if you like, in the same way as we are dealing with, crude example, the scourge of HIV/AIDS. We have to deal with it whilst we're looking for a vaccine. The truth of the matter is we have to deal with this economic crisis while we're looking for a solution. Answers are just taking too long. And I think the impact is becoming too heavy for the world citizens. It's not just a South African problem. And I'm beginning to wonder also as to how long will we be able to hold on as South Africa, given all these challenges in global areas, particularly in Europe. So the challenges in that area. But for the purposes of this presentation, I think we really welcome the work that you are doing, and we need to find a way as Parliament to begin to interact with these processes much, much more closely. Because it takes the issue of the transformation in the financial sector to a different level. It goes beyond what we've been talking about in the banking arena, EBT, and all those kind of those minimalist interventions in terms of the financial sector generally. So this is a comprehensive way of beginning to look at it. And I think the issue that was raised by Honorable George I don't know how we deal with it, because I think Parliament's voice must also be heard in defense of these institutions. You can't allow an accused, people who are doing all sorts of things, to take and tarnish the image of very credible institutions that seeks to protect the financial system in this country, and we keep quiet about it. So there must be a way to begin to look into these things. As a committee, I think we need to apply our mind on this, issues. I think more because of time, we'll accept what we could be able to handle today. But certainly, I think as a committee, we'll sit and reflect on how best we take this process forward. And thank you very much. The documents are here to continue to inform ourselves as to what are the approaches. Thanks. Honorable members, because your transport is going to leave in the next 15 minutes, you should start preparing yourself and moving towards the transport workplace. Thank you very much, honorable members. And taking into consideration